Welcome to Fields Financial Fitness, presented by Comprehensive Retirement Solutions, where you'll learn about the choices you need to consider as you approach your financial journey. Check out our blog at crsindiana.com. Now here's Mike and Tiffany.
And I'm Mike.
And I'm Tiffany.
Welcome to Fields Financial Fitness.
Giving you the knowledge to help you keep your finances fit.
In this show, we like to discuss questions that are submitted to us by our clients and by other people that may interact with us on the internet.
To submit questions for our show or to recommend specific topics that you would like to hear about, contact us at info@crsindiana.com.
CRS Indiana's Comprehensive Retirement Solutions is a firm that I'm the president of in Carmel, Indiana. And today we're going to be talking about managing your lifestyle. You know, a lot of people come into our office and they're very concerned about how they can try to maximize what they have coming in to provide for the future they want to have. The reality is that for a lot of us, if we're down to the point that life is forcing us to manage our budget, it really is fairly easy to do compared to when we have enough coming in that no matter what, we can cover our basic needs. So today we're going to talk a lot about making wise choices and trying to be able to maximize what you have coming in for the future that you really desire to have. So managing your lifestyle is all about making smart choices. And every decision that we make, whether it be where we live, whether it be what we drive, how we spend our leisure time, all of these have an impact on our overall find smart strategies that can enhance lifestyle while at the same time potentially freeing up assets for investments in the long term.
I think everything in life is all about making smart choices, though.
It is. And sometimes it's helpful to think a little bit about, you know, basically your basic Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Now, this is a 1943 study by Maslow that place lifestyle choices on an ascending scale. It starts off with, of course, your basic needs, you know, fundamentally food, shelter, and being able to provide for your family in that way. The next level up is safety and making sure that your family feels safe. Now, for most of us, these are basic necessities that, frankly, in the United States, we feel very confident in all the time. The next is psychological needs, and then moves up to self-actualization, and finally, peak experiences. So here we're going to talk a little bit about what some of those peak experiences might be and different decisions within your housing and your other types of purchases that you might do that'll help you to think about, at least, how you could save money and be able to accumulate more to provide for more of your financial life down the road.
Well, there's a lot of different representations of each one of those. So obviously, most of us have gone through that in school at some point in time on those basic needs.
Absolutely. So let's take a look at one of the biggest ones that for most Americans they consider, and that is their home. At whatever stage of life it is, it's oftentimes important to think about your home both as a place to have your family and also as, of course, what it's a financial instrument that meets your ongoing needs. So some assessments you might want to think about. One, is your house still the size that you want? Is the maintenance cost and trouble still worth the satisfaction that it brings to you? And finally, if your home is financed, do you have the best possible financing arrangements for that home? And that can make a big difference.
So home is different things to different people, though. So by home, are you just indicating that this applies to people with a house, or are you talking about wherever it is that they happen to live?
Well, it's really whatever they happen to live, because if you live in an apartment, as an example, and you're renting, the question is how long do you rent versus when you purchase a home down the road and buy a home? Ultimately, if you are purchasing a home, you're going to get back some of the money you're putting into that monthly payment in the form of cashing out the house at some time down the road. Now, that might be something that your children inherit, for that matter, as well. But at least with a house, as opposed to renting, you do get some of that money back at some point in the future. Now, that comes with other attendant costs, though, that you need to be prepared to take on. If you're currently renting and you're, let's say you're paying $1,000 a month in rent and you're comparing it to a mortgage of $1,000 a month in mortgage, houses come with additional expenses that you don't encounter as a renter.
Don't I know it.
And so you need to add it in, perhaps utility costs, if that's not included in your rent or if it's already included in your rent. You also need to consider maintenance. You know, what's it going to take for mowing and for everything else? So when you're comparing the two, it's not a dollar-for-dollar comparison between a mortgage payment and what you might be paying in rent. And where you are in your life may make a big difference as far as what you actually choose to do at a particular time. If you're just moving into a new community, you may want to rent there for a while and get used to the new community, make sure your job's secure, and ultimately be able to know where you'd like to live within that community before you do a longer term purchase of a home.
Before you start having to replace the HVAC system and the sprinklers.
Everything that goes with all of that, exactly. Yeah. The hardest part about that, of course, is when you're buying a house, you need to look at the time frame you plan to be in the home. If you plan to be there for 7 years and longer, a house is going to make a whole lot more sense than renting. The transaction costs to get out of the house really do make it more problematic if you're looking at a shorter time frame than that. So we want to look at the time frame that you intend to be in the community. And like I said, if it's going to be a shorter time frame, renting may make much more sense than purchasing a home for you at that time. On the other hand, the longer you intend to be in the community, the more having a house that accumulates some of that value and returns it back to you really does make sense.
And you always have to take into consideration like resale value, maybe where you're living at.
Where you're living at, how you're going to be able to get the value back out of it is critical to think about. And when you're preparing a house for sale, especially, you need to be thinking about how to prepare it for the market as it exists at the time that you're trying to sell it. Not necessarily as it was when you first purchased the house 15, 20 years ago. All that said, though, as you're purchasing it, it's a rare person that actually has the ability to purchase a house outright out of cash. Typically, most people are going to be financing that purchase.
And unless you happen to be a celebrity.
Unless you happen to be a celebrity or you happen to be independently wealthy in another fashion, no question about it. So one of the first considerations when purchasing a home is whether or not to take a 15-year or a 30-year loan, whether you take it on a variable basis or on a fixed basis. And, you know, of course, the nice thing about a shorter-term loan is it is paid off much faster. And, of course, depending on whether or not you can afford that higher payment, it makes a nice difference if you're able to say that you can pay it off in just 15 years. You can even do a 10-year mortgage for that matter.
Wow.
Now, the other question, though, is you have to choose between fixed versus variable. And here, and especially in today's interest rate environment, I oftentimes encourage people to consider locking in today's interest rates on a fixed basis as opposed to looking at the variable interest rates. Now, the way this works, if it's a fixed rate mortgage, then it's going to be the same interest rate for the entirety of the loan. So if today you lock in, for instance, at 4% or 4.5% interest for 30 years, then for the next 30 years, you're only paying historically what's been an extremely low interest rate. Now, I go back to my parents back when they purchased their house back in the early 80s, and they were sitting there at about a 12% interest rate on their mortgage for their house. And at that rate, you don't want to keep that very long. So a variable interest rate, if interest rates go down, would actually allow them to participate in the decline of interest without having to refinance the mortgage. One advantage of a variable interest rate is they typically have lower introductory rates. So if you're looking at just a 5-year or 10-year balloon, where you have a low interest rate for the first 5 to 10 years, and then it can adjust based upon current rates, or you can refinance the loan, that might be a consideration as well, depending upon your exact circumstances. But largely, this answer is going to be very, very individualized based upon what your circumstances are and what you're trying to accomplish.
So it sounds like there's a lot of different options, obviously, for lifestyle, places to live. I'm sure stage of life impacts this quite a bit. And of course, the money that you're going to be spending just on a monthly basis to keep your home up, depending upon, you know, the amount of money that you have to put down.
Yes. And how you make these decisions can make a tremendous difference in the actual cost. Just before the break here, let's talk about the highest priced home in the United States today. Ooh. There's a home in Manalapan, Florida, and it hit the market in 2016 for $195 million.
Wow.
That's a little beyond my budget.
A little bit.
And hopefully you're in the situation where you can afford that. But, you know, what would it really cost to own that is a question that we just ran through this example. This is an extreme example to make a point, but let's take a look at the real cost of this. Starting with the mortgage, you know, if you're going to put 20% down on a $195 million home, assuming that you get 4.75, large loans charge higher interest rates than lower than what they call conforming loans. If it's a 30-year mortgage, your payment would only be $813,700 per month.
Only.
Only. That's it. Pretty affordable. $9.8 million per year. By the way, that's about 175 times the national median income this year, as a matter of fact. So now this would result in about $137 million going towards interest over the duration of the mortgage.
Ouch.
So, you know, you bought it for $195,000, you paid another $137,000 in interest on that. Now, if we estimate that you have a hypothetical, as an example, 1.25% of the price of the house for taxes and another 1% for insurance and upkeep, it's going to cost in excess of $14 million per year to own and maintain that home.
Well, then I guess after the break, we should actually come back and maybe talk about how this would apply to the rest of us that cannot afford a $195 million house.
Yep.
Fields Financial Fitness, presented by Comprehensive Retirement Solutions on Freedom 95. This is Fields Financial Fitness, presented by Comprehensive Retirement Solutions, online at crsindiana.com. Now, back to Mike and Tiffany.
And today we're talking about your home as an investment or as a piece of your lifestyle. And one thing to be aware of is that the house is not just a significant cash flow item that you need to be aware of in your budget, but also it represents one of your most significant assets and also a part of your lifestyle as well. Where you live, how you live is meaningful on so many levels that our homes reflect decisions we've made about lifestyles for our family, lifestyles for the community we want to be in, and everything that goes on with that. So it's going to be unique for each person as to how they make that decision. But the financial component of the decision does need to be considered very thoughtfully. For example, if you have a large home, you're going to be spending more on utilities, more in maintenance. You're going to be spending really a lot more on a large house than you would on a smaller home, even if they're similar in price. So if you look at more square feet, that may result in higher overall expenses that you may not be thinking about as much when you're walking through shopping for the home. I know I've had the experience where I walked in and as I was shopping for the house that I live in today, it was real easy to keep looking at bigger and bigger and more. Whatever my budget could allow, correct?
Absolutely. The unfortunate part is there really sometimes isn't a huge difference in the actual home, in except for price point. I mean, you're getting more square footage, but your layout's exactly the same. And that's fortunately something that's easy to consider going back and forth is, hey, maybe I can have the exact same layout and save a little.
That's true. And that those ongoing savings can actually add up over time. The other thing that's true, though, about a house is that it is an asset. It's a reserve of money, if you will. And over time, especially as you think about your retirement planning, that can make a big difference. Now, I've got a lot of clients that over the years have gotten to the point where their children are out of the home and they're thinking about how they can downsize. Now, what I find interesting is there's a difference between downsizing and right-sizing. Now, downsizing is where you actually take the equity in your home and you use that equity to purchase a house for your retirement. Right-sizing is where you look at the value of your home and you find a smaller home that actually costs more money than the house you're living in already.
Oh, yes. Those are really popular now.
So we're not going to talk about that part of it right there because, unfortunately, that doesn't create a solution for your finances. Rather, that creates oftentimes more trouble for your finances, although they're beautiful homes. What we're going to look at is how we can utilize the asset of your home and what the difference can be once your kids are out and you're now ready to look for a retirement home. And so as an example, let's say that we have someone a little more realistic than $197 million. Maybe they have a $500,000 house that they raised their family in, they sent them to college, and now they're churning in their early 50s, the mid-50s, and they're thinking, okay, let's get into a house that's going to be right for us for retirement. And in our hypothetical example, let's say they have $300,000 in equity in their home, and they decide that they don't want to have a mortgage payment anymore. So rather than continuing to be in that home, we're going to find a house for about $250,000, taking our equity and using that money to help enhance our retirement, perhaps even accelerate our retirement a little bit. So taking that example and running through the math, so let's say that they are able to sell their house. They receive $300,000 net from the sale of the house. They've got $50,000 left over after buying a nice $250,000 ranch home that they plan to live in for the rest of their life. That'd be a nice outcome, don't you think?
I think that would be great.
Absolutely.
Pending the market.
Now, the nice thing about that is because one is a smaller home, two, they freed up an additional $50,000. Let's say this couple managed to save that $50,000 that's left over. Now, they've got a paid-for home. They've got a smaller house with smaller expenses each month, and they're saving, of course, on the mortgage payment that they're not making for the larger home anymore. So doing the math, let's say they have about $1,600 a month in savings. And being a couple that's looking to maximize their wealth, they go ahead and they save the $50,000 and the $1,600 a month to provide for their future. If you did that, and you did that over a 20-year period, and you earned, say, 6% on the money inside that investment that you put the $50,000 plus the $1,600 a month into, just by changing your home, you could accumulate another $900,000 towards your retirement.
I like that math.
That's not too bad. I have a lot of couples that come into my office, and the first thing they ask is, how can I possibly catch up? Mike, I've been a little behind in my savings. This is a very easy way to be able to do that by reassessing your largest single expense and your largest single asset as a way of being able to enhance your retirement savings. So just some basic guidelines to be thinking about. First, finding the best mortgage structure for your current home is one of the best things you can do for immediately taking care of things. If you haven't refinanced in the last 7 years, and I'm not sure how many people wouldn't have, but if you have not yet considered that, take a look at your current interest rate and see if you can reduce that and reduce your payment perhaps per month. Reassess your house. You know, a house is an asset, and as an asset, it needs to be maintained, it needs to be properly used, and most importantly, it's an asset that you hope to get value perhaps back out of, and then at the end. And then finally, right-sizing it if you find that the costs of the house are outweighing the satisfaction of having that home. If you're in a house that's got 5 extra bedrooms and you don't need all those bedrooms anymore, maybe finding a smaller house that's more cost-affordable would allow you to free up the budget to be able to save for your future again as well.
If you're just tuning in, this is Fields Financial Fitness, and we are discussing how to manage your financial lifestyle.
The next thing that we want to take a look at is lifestyle choices in terms of luxury items and leisure activities. Now, this is where choices get to be a lot of fun. In other words, what you plan to buy and what you do. And let's face it, the line between necessity and luxury changes as time goes on.
Especially whenever it comes to coffee.
Yes, indeed. Starbucks, is it going to be a Starbucks coffee or is it going to be a McDonald's cup coffee? Now, at the end of the day, it's still coffee.
Oh, says the non-coffee drinker.
Exactly right. So, you know, that's the one thing that I have found to be true over and over in my life is that back when I was at Taylor University, one of my professors there had a catchphrase that I've learned that is more true than not. A luxury, once enjoyed, becomes a necessity. And for a lot of us, our lifestyles tend to expand out, and what previously would have been a luxurious trip now suddenly becomes the default trip that we want to take every single year. I'm sure you've never experienced anything like that.
No.
So let's examine one of those things that is a luxury that people dream of, and we're going to make it a little bit of an extreme example, but let's say that you're in the position where you're looking for your dream sports car, and you're contemplating a Ferrari California. Okay, now this is a special version of Ferrari that's marketed in the United States.
Okay, I'll have to rely on you.
Yes, think about that a little bit more. Okay. Sure. And so a Ferrari California has 553 horsepower, has a published top speed of 196 miles per hour. I will note right away that it is not legal to drive 196 miles an hour on any road in the United States that I'm aware of.
Is it made in Germany?
It certainly is actually not made. It's made in Italy, as a matter of fact.
Oh, okay. All right.
But, you know, it costs about $200,000. But, of course, just like a house, when you buy a car like that, that's not the only story. You still have to put gas in the car. You still have to pay taxes on the car.
Imagine what the oil change will cost on that.
An oil change may be a little more expensive than it would be for a standard American car, if you will. And then, of course, there's also the insurance. I mean, my goodness, you put your average 18-year-old into a Ferrari. Imagine how much the insurance is going to cost.
I don't want to imagine that.
So taking into consideration of that, you may actually run into another cost of about $40,000 a year for operating that vehicle beyond the purchase price. Now, as an example, though, for an alternative, let's consider perhaps a Porsche 911.
Oh, okay. I can imagine that.
Now, that's just going to be a bit of a step down. It's only got 400 horsepower. And, of course, it has only a published top speed of 188 miles per hour.
Okay.
But, you know, once again, can't legally drive that, at least in Indiana, anywhere that I'm familiar with. Maybe you can go on a track somewhere, but you're certainly not doing it on 465. So, using that same hypothetical 20% figure, the Porsche may cost about $20,000 a year. So let's say you happen to be in the fortunate position where these are your choices. What's the financial impact if you choose the Porsche over the Ferrari? All right. And if you were to do that and run the numbers on it, you would find that if you could save that additional $20,000 per year, and of course, let's not forget about the additional $100,000 savings right out of the gate, it can make a big difference in your long term. Now, let's bring this down a little bit closer to reality.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit, okay? So, and let's say that you're considering the ultimate buying decision between two different BMWs. And you're in the position where you're looking at either the BMW 700 series or the 500 series. Now, the 700 series starts at about $82,000. The 5 series starts at around $50,000 or so. So, revisiting that example, after running the numbers, you know, the sticker price, the difference, we had couples consider, well, maybe the 5 Series, even though it has a little bit less room, might be the appropriate luxury vehicle for us. So, because if you look at that difference, if you invested the additional $31,000, and then you also saved the additional savings of the ongoing savings, after 5 years, just 5 years, you could accumulate another $75,000 to buy your next vehicle. As opposed to with the 7 Series, you just have it paid off by that time.
Okay. So, yes, now that we've brought that down.
And this does work actually for vehicles that are at lower levels as well. So, lower levels of investment as well. So, if you think about getting a 5 Series versus getting, as an example, a less expensive car that maybe is not a luxury brand, all that does work to your favor as well. It's just a matter of running through the numbers. But simple choices like this, that opportunity cost of investing that additional money, can make a big difference long term for you as well.
I think I'll stick with my Jeep for right now.
There you go.
When we come back from the break, we will be talking about leisure activities and choices you can make to more appropriately manage your financial lifestyle.
Fields Financial Fitness, presented by Comprehensive Retirement Solutions on Freedom 95. This is Fields Financial Fitness, presented by Comprehensive Retirement Solutions, tax resources and useful links at crsindiana.com. Here's Mike and Tiffany. If I had $1 million,
I'd be rich. Welcome back. Now we're going to be talking about one of my favorite things, leisure activities. What a great way to spend money. Oh, wait. Is that what I'm supposed to be saying here?
You said that out loud. Yes, we all heard that, as a matter of fact. You know, this whole show is talking about opportunity cost. It's what it really comes down to. If you consider different choices and different ways to enjoy luxuries, you might be able to find ways to also achieve your savings goals while you're achieving your luxury goals at the same time. And in the last segment, we were talking about different kinds of cars. And during the break, we were debating a little bit about, well, how about other types of cars you might consider? So as an example, a Ford Mustang. And I've got a client that is her favorite vehicle. She is so looking forward to buying a Ford Mustang. Well, Ford Mustangs are one of those vehicles that you can accessorize to the nth degree. And this isn't the full range, but, you know, a basic Ford Mustang, according to our research online, costs about $26,000. Now, that's the bare bones down without anything extra.
Pushing your own little button.
No, you're not pedaling to drive that car down the road. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, about $25,000, $26,000 gets you into a Ford Mustang. Now, if you're looking for a Shelby GT350, okay, now this one's souped up. It's got a much bigger engine. It's got a lot more features to it. We'll go a lot faster, a lot more quickly than the base Mustang. That's $58,000. So, you know, taking this down to, well, maybe I don't need the full Shelby, but maybe I want a little more than the base. and finding ways to use that difference, that opportunity cost of spending the full amount for the fit for the Shelby, and using that for your future is what this is all about at the end of the day.
Absolutely. But you know what? I know that you could spend an entire show discussing the variations of cars because so that it happens to be just so your personal interest there.
So let's refocus on, luxury
items.
Let's
go a little bit further here on the types of, maybe trips we can take.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the thing is that people are rethinking some of their leisure options. And today we live in a world where you have choices. Rather than a luxury hotel room, you might look at an Airbnb as an example. And you can also look at, some people are considering, rather than buying a second home, maybe I'll just share in that. Maybe two or three couples will go together to buy that second home so we can all have different trips to Florida. Hopefully their spring breaks aren't on the same time where they all like each other when they go down their spring breaks.
A lot.
Do that. So let's take an example, though, of what that might look like for a two-week vacation. Now, and what we're going to look at is for our study couple, if you will, they're considering staying expensive homes. And they always have stayed at expensive hotels because they feel that money has been to enhance their lifestyle. And as they think about different choices, how can I experience the same kind of luxury lifestyle and yet perhaps do it at a slightly lower cost? And so if you take a $400 per night hotel or condo or condo that you're renting from a private owner, maybe you go to an Airbnb or do something where it's only going to be $200 a night in the same community. Well, over a 2 week period, that's $2,800 that you save by doing that. Now, by staying in a condo or perhaps an Airbnb, you might also be able to prepare your own meals. You have a kitchen in the house after all. And that cuts back on your food expenditures. And if you watch for deals on flights and perhaps figure out different ways to go there, you could save an additional $2,000 per year. So just by adjusting how you go about your vacation, you might be able to save about $4,800 per year on that. Now, of course, in this show, we're talking about opportunity costs. So what do we do with that savings? We save it. We invest it. We grow it for the future. And if
we don't go on another vacation later.
Well, that might be a choice for a family to have. But keep in mind, our goal here is to help people accumulate more money for their retirement. So same couple, they're trying to make sure they catch up after years of raising kids and putting them through college. Now it's time to prepare for their retirement. So assuming we save that difference, that $4,800, we invest in that same, say, 6% rate of return, after a 20-year period, saving in that fashion, they could accumulate another $175,000 towards their retirement.
That's definitely a bigger picture focus.
Yep. Now, let's keep in mind, as we talk about that hypothetical 6% rate of return, we're not talking about any specific investment. It also doesn't, it's not affiliated with any particular investment that you might be able to buy, but as an estimator, it's a good way to estimate for future gain. So looking at what we've been able to do with this, and if you really to summarize this, if we were to save on a house through downsizing and be able to take that money and invest it, assuming that same $50,000 that we had up front, and the savings from the maintenance, savings from the utilities, savings from the mortgage payment, by adjusting down for this particular couple, if they buy the less expensive version, the Porsche, in this case, actually, we're talking about the BMW 5 Series rather than the 7 Series. We're getting away from our Mustang example
okay.
that we used here a little bit. And finally, by changing around how we vacation, what we're looking at there, the savings we've talked about so far, the home, that $50,000 plus the additional maintenance and savings of $1,600 a month, over a 20-year period, that's $906,523. That, of course, looking at the car and making that adjustment between the one to the next was actually over a 20-year period. We talked about the 5-year benefit of that for the next purchase. But if you continue to save that money and continue to grow it, over a 20-year period, that difference between the 7 Series and the 5 Series comes out to about $176,444 on my calculator right here. And finally, of course, changing around just your vacationing a little bit. And we're not talking about taking you from a luxury hotel and now we're tent camping.
Thank goodness.
So we're talking about just adjusting it to perhaps a condo or looking into a home and doing a little more research in advance rather than just signing on with the nearest luxury hotel of your choice. And so that, if you continue to save that additional money, that's another $176,000. We're talking over a 20-year period, the potential difference of around $1.259 million or $1,259,000 that you could accumulate to provide for your retirement potentially.
Well, this does sound, I'm sure, to some people a little extreme, but really I do a lot of research in hotels on a regular basis. And I have worked in the travel industry in the past. And I do know that there's a lot of variance, and you really don't have to get a low-end hotel to save a lot of money. There's a pretty extreme difference between, you know, being in the center of downtown where you're having to pay parking and that kind of thing, and just, you know, one of the nicer hotels that are kind of on the outskirts. I personally prefer, you know, the ones that have more rooms in them, maybe a refrigerator, they've got room for your kids. So hopefully people won't see this as, gosh, you're taking away all my super fun stuff here.
Well, and that's the point of this, is that for those that are finding themselves in a position where they're managing, not to because they have a necessity and need because they are having a hard time meeting their bills, but rather they've got enough coming in to meet their bills, but now they're looking for, how do I maximize our money? That's been the point of this entire show, is that you can make informed decisions and you can make conscious decisions about how you go about your lifestyle that can make a tremendous difference in accumulating money. A lot of people through the course of their lives have not saved up what they need to for their retirement, and they know that. And now they find themselves in a position where things are changing. Their kids are getting out of school, and now it's time to really start focusing on how they can accumulate the money they need for their own retirement. And these are some simple choices at a fairly elevated lifestyle that can make a tremendous difference in being able to accumulate the money they need to have to maintain their lifestyle, not only before retirement, but after they retire as well. Plus, it might instill some disciplines that they don't naturally have. Let's face it, most of us, as our paychecks increase, we tend to have our lifestyle increase with it, because after all, now we can afford some of those things that we always wanted to have. And as I said before, a luxury, once you enjoy it. I mean, think about, when's the last time you heard of someone actually rolling down a window? You know, all of us get used to those electric windows that we can just hit the button and up and down it goes in the car, right? Well, just imagine if you were required to go back and have to roll down a window again.
For shame. Dial a telephone.
Dialing,
or,
yes,
oh,
exactly.
Or the automatic windshield wipers I used to have on a previous car, and then I kept sitting there going, why are they not sensing that the rain
it
is on my window?
Good of you to cut back onto a more affordable vehicle that way, perhaps. You know, but it really just comes down to, how do we best utilize these decisions so we can save some money and hopefully not just reduce your expenses, but also be able to, on an ongoing basis, take that money and invest it in various ways to provide for your future, to try to achieve this type of additional money for your long-term financial success.
You know, I tease a lot about coffee because, well, that's just one of my survival mechanisms. But I looked up the prices, and at $5 per day for a cup of coffee, people spend an average of $1,800 a year in coffee. But if you started to buy K-cups through, you know, wholesale or whatever, it's about $110 a year. That's pretty amazing whenever you talk about specific little choices, and not just your big purchases like your car and your home, but in little things you can do every day to kind of just pay attention.
Now, to close the loop here, we are going to be talking about in future shows, what do you do with that money once you identify it? And what's the best way to accumulate that? But what we have coming up after the break is we actually have a question from a listener from one of our previous shows that we're going to discuss a bit more. So
stay tuned.
Fields Financial Fitness, presented by Comprehensive Retirement Solutions on Freedom 95. This is Fields Financial Fitness, presented by Comprehensive Retirement Solutions, tax resources and useful links at crsindiana.com. Here's Mike and Tiffany.
If I had $1 million, I'd be rich.
So in the previous segments of our show today, we've been talking about managing your lifestyle and ways that you can possibly save a little bit here and there so that you can continue to grow what you're going to be living on in retirement. Now we're at the part of our show where we're going to be talking with Mike. People have submitted some questions online, and there's one in particular that we want to go over in a segment called Ask Mike.
And we'd like to thank Kent for submitting this at info@crsindiana.com. The question that came in was an inquiry about the eligibility, and here's just a quote. I want to inquire about my eligibility to claim Social Security divorced spouse benefits. And we talked briefly about this during our Social Security show. You know, I meet all the guidelines to claim benefits of my former spouse, Social Security, married for nearly 12 years, divorced for many years, never remarried, a key component of this. And basically, the question has to do with how they can access the benefits from their spouse and be able to utilize that to maximize their own benefits as well. So the intent here is to be able to draw off the benefits that he's entitled to as a divorcee, deferring his own benefits until he can get that to be maximized at age 70. And that's a key thing to be aware of. So first, let's talk a little bit about just what those divorcee benefits. First of all, if you are participating in the Social Security system, and let's face it, all of us are participating in the Social Security system. And let's say that through the course of life, like Kent, you happen to be someone who you were married for a while, and then unfortunately that marriage did not continue. And now you're in a position where perhaps you were, during that time, staying at home and you didn't have as much of a work record as your spouse did, or while you did, perhaps you both had very good work records, you're trying to figure out how we can get the most out of the Social Security system on the back end. The good news is, one, you do have access to spousal benefits as a divorcee. And that those spousal benefits essentially are that you can collect one half of your ex-spouse's full retirement amount at your full retirement age.
Is that in addition to your own retirement?
It depends. And that's what this gets to be kind of interesting, because the answer to this became much more complex about 2 years ago. See, 2 years ago, they made a number of changes to how your benefit and your spouse's benefit, or your ex-spouse's benefit, interact with each other. And one question to get right out of the way, if you are claiming on your ex-spouse's benefit, it has no impact on that ex-spouse's personal benefit for Social Security. You can't claim and reduce their benefit.
That's a really good thing to mention. Yes.
I've encountered a few people that may have wanted to try to do that possibly could.
Yes.
So we want to put that out there right away. It does not impact them, but it can make a nice difference for you. So the way that works today, and for anyone that's trying to apply for that, if you're under your full retirement age, which for most of us is 66 or perhaps 66 in a few months, all the way up to age 67, where you get your normal benefit from Social Security, not your age 70 benefit, your age 62, but your normal benefit, that full retirement age, at any time before that, you can go ahead and apply. But what they'll do is they'll make you take your own benefit. And if one half of your ex-spouse's benefit is higher than your own, then you get that added to it. Okay. Now your divorcee, so basically let's say your benefit itself was $500 and one half of your ex-spouse's was $800, you'd get your $500 and they would add another $300 for your divorcee benefit to get you up to the total of $800. Okay. Now in this case with Kent, he happens to have been born in the right time frame. If you were born before January 2nd of 1954, okay, so you're currently about 64 years old. If you were born during that time and you have already, before that time, and you've reached your full retirement age, you have a choice where you can choose to receive only your divorced spouse benefits and delay getting your own until after. This is what's known as a restricted application. So if you do a restricted application and you can actually collect your divorcee benefits from off of your ex-spouse, and defer getting your own, getting deferred credits to your own benefit. The advantage there is that your benefit may grow to be higher than what you're eligible for on your divorced spouse's benefit, securing a higher payment from Social Security when you finally collect it, sometime up to the time that you're 70 years of age. So to give some numbers to it, and these are hypothetical numbers, of course, and not connected to the person who asked the question or anything else, but let's say that your benefit at full retirement age is going to be, once again, $900. And let's say that one half of your ex-spouse's benefit also happened to be $1,000. Okay. If you happen to be born before January 2nd, 1954, you can collect one half of your ex-spouse's benefit at your full retirement age. And at that $1,000, collect that for the next 4 years, your benefit in the meantime will benefit from delayed retirement credits. Now, those delayed retirement credits increase your benefit by 8% per year plus whatever they declare in Social Security inflation each year. So you could have, if it's a 2% declaration, it could be increased by 10%. So your $900 over the course of those 4 years may grow to be more than the $1,000 you're getting as your from your ex-spouse.
Do you only get that increase if you continue to work or regardless?
Actually, you get it regardless. But you do actually, if you continue to work, depending upon your specific work history, it can actually enhance that a little bit. Let's assume that you're not working, though, and you're just collecting that and living off of other resources. When you get to be 70 years old, you have a choice. You can look at your current benefit off of your ex-spouse, or you can look at your own benefit and be able to adjust to that one and switch it. Now, once again, that's only for people born before January 2, 1954.
All right. So what about the other group?
For the rest of us, essentially, it works the same way as I described for someone who is under their full retirement age. They can actually just get their own benefit. And if their ex-spouse's benefit will enhance and grow it, then they can actually can get it to be higher, then they can collect both at the same time.
Okay.
But they can't, they don't, unfortunately, after January, people born after January 2, 1954 are not able to do a restricted application anymore.
Okay.
Now, that also works, by the way, for spouses. If you happen to be born before that date, you can actually collect your, do a restricted application, still collect one half of the benefit. The difference is today versus where it was a couple of years ago. Today, your spouse that you're collecting benefits off of, when you're, if you're married, actually has to be collecting benefits. One important thing about the divorcee benefit is they don't require that your spouse that you're collecting benefits from is actually currently collecting benefits themselves. They do have to be eligible age, meaning they have to be 62 years old. But they don't require that you actually, they're actually applied for their own benefit yet, because after all, you don't have any control over that.
Okay, here's a nuance you haven't really gone over. What if your ex-spouse happens to be deceased? Does it apply anymore?
If your ex-spouse happens to be deceased, it's still based upon their actual age as it would have been in this year if were still alive.
Okay.
So thank you, Kent, for the question. It actually was a great question to go over a very interesting niche inside of Social Security planning at this point. Once again, restricted applications are something that's going to be going away relatively quickly here, but there is a window in time. If you happen to be born before January 2nd of 1955, highly professional understands just how to best utilize that benefit for your family.
I'm so glad you know the complexities of the Social Security system, because my eyes are kind of rolling back in my head right now. If you would like to find out how these principles apply to your situation, you can feel welcome to contact us at Comprehensive Retirement Solutions, 317-844-5100, for your free financial fitness chat.
In the meantime, please submit more questions. Thank you again for that question, Kent, and we'd like to encourage others to, if you have questions you'd like to hear us discuss on the radio, please submit those to info@crsindiana.com.
We were so glad to have you join us today. This is Tiff.
This is Mike. And remember, the plans of the diligent lead to profit as surely as haste leads to poverty.
Mike Fields is a registered principal offering advisory services and securities through Cetera Advisors, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC. Mike Fields and Comprehensive Retirement Solutions are independent of Cetera.